Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Tuesday, June 11th, 2019. I am Dave Hamilton, standing in for the talented Kelly Gamont. My guests today include Mr. Brian Chaffin. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Oh, yeah, I'm here to learn.
Same. And John Martellaro, thanks for joining us, too.
Happy to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. So we have two things to talk about today. One is Apple's TV strategy by the numbers. And we will get to that in a moment, because the first thing that I want to talk about, John, is this session that happened last week at WWDC called Advances in macOS Security. And for those of you that weren't at WWDC, you can actually go watch this. There are two ways to do it. Three. You can just do it on the web. And of course, we have a link in the show notes for you and in the chapters to the show, if you are so inclined. But you can also use the iOS app that Apple releases for WWDC. And you can use the unofficial Mac app that Apple doesn't release for WWDC, but is available at WWDC.io. And that link will also be in the show notes for you. So, John, this session, Advances in macOS Security, says we are on a journey to continuously improve macOS security with a particular focus on preventing malware and protecting user data. Join us on the next step and learn more about what's new in Gatekeeper for keeping malware out, as well as new protections that help keep users' data and activity under their control. So keep the bad stuff out, keep the good stuff or the sensitive stuff in. You watched this session and I'm not going to say twice. What you said. You twice. Watched it twice.
And I still don't remember everything. It's so rich and complex and full of good stuff. This is session 701 that was presented Tuesday morning by Garrett Jacobson and Kelly Yancey of the Security Engineering and Architecture team. And what made it appealing to me is two things. One, it's well put together, engaging, fun, interesting, progressing logically. The presenters were pretty good. And some sessions, you know, you go to and you fall asleep because there's so much code. You can't relate to it. But that leads into the second part of why this is so cool, is because there's a lot of anecdotal information about how Apple's clamping down on macOS and it's going to get less and less useful to you. And there's a sort of latent hysteria about Apple making macOS eventually unusable for the rest of us. And this session lays out in an informative and intelligent way what Apple's trying to do with macOS security. And there's two parts to it. The first part of the presentation is Gatekeeper and changes in Gatekeeper as it evolves and the addition of notarization. And the second part is privacy policy changes.
Yep.
So, for example, quickly, you know, there's protected areas in your Mac, photos, messages, and mail. That's going to extend to the desktop and the trash can and external storage devices in Catalina. So they've got these nicely laid out presentation with icons progressing from old to new, and you get to kind of see a matrix form what's changing in Catalina.
And John, I have to interrupt with what I think is an important question. Is this presentation accessible by normal folks? Accessible from absorbing the content standpoint.
If you're a modestly technical reader of Mac Observer and you're familiar with concepts like quarantine files, with Gatekeeper, with things like notarization, we've written about it in Mac Observer. Yeah, this will all be
great,
pretty comfortable for you. And the thing about it is they don't get too bogged down in the first half with these charts showing the evolution from Mojave to Catalina. There are some code examples in the second half of the presentation that show developers how to check and see if they have been restricted to certain access areas and code to check on the status of permissions and things like that. But It's unlike some sessions where the code just makes you bored to tears.
Sure. So
these code examples are pretty nice.
And actually, there's something to be said about that. Swift, in particular, is very human-readable code. So when it comes to presenting something like this, you can get away, or they can get away with a little bit more than they might have been able to previously, at least in terms of where they lose non-programmers or even lose programmers, because it's reading someone else's code is often, you know, even if you're a daily coder, sometimes very difficult. I want to get to some of the takeaways, though, that you have from this. So you mentioned that they walk us through the differences between how Mojave handles things and how Catalina handles things. Can you isolate some of those for us and highlight them so that folks that don't have time or inclination to watch can get some of these takeaways?
Do my best.
Awesome.
So we're familiar with Gatekeeper in that it isolates you to apps that are from Apple or from the App Store or recognized developers who signed their code.
Right. To make sure you're not running something bad on your Mac. That's right. Yeah.
Right. That stays in place. What is happening in 10.14.5 is a new addition to check for malicious content. Also starting in Catalina, there will be a recognition of two ways to launch apps. Most people are familiar with launch services, launchd, where you double click on an app and it launches and all sorts of things happen. The code is signature is checked. Make sure that it complies with the policy. So if you said only from certified developers that it's not signed, it isn't going to run and so on. But Apple is adding malicious content checking. They're adding notarization, which means that you submitted your code for scanning and it's notarized by your Xcode system. What's interesting about Catalina is that there's another class of applications from the terminal. Scripting applications, things that are launched through exec, through your terminal, those haven't been checked in Mojave. Now they're going to be in the same class. They'll be quarantined. They'll be checked for tampering. They'll be checked for signatures. The users are going to have to approve the launch. So that's
even
that's
something that you haven't, say, double clicked on in the Finder, like something that's being run by an installation agent in the background, will also now be subject to these Gatekeeper things, starting with Catalina. Is that?
Well, they didn't specifically mention scripts within installers, so I can't speak authoritatively about that.
Okay.
But it could be that if the installer as a Mac app package is digitally signed and notarized, you won't have to improve internal scripts. That's my guess.
Yeah, no, you answered the question I asked, but not the question I was thinking. So if something is installed that is built to run in the background, what it sounds like is this thing needs to be your Mac will pop up with authorization to run it, even if it's not something that you are running from, you know, clicking the dock or clicking within the Finder is what that sounds like. And to me, that's a good thing.
That's my surmise.
So I want to point something out, and now it's starting to make sense. I installed the first developer beta of Catalina on a test machine, and actually all went fairly well. It's been fairly stable, even with third party apps. Like, you know, for the most part, it's pretty darn good. I don't recommend you run it, but it's, you know, it's usable, which is good. What I have noticed is with apps that are in my dock, the first time I click it to run it, the dock icon doesn't bounce. A new, like a duplicate of that app icon appears in the, you know, not in the dock icons, and it bounces and launches from there for the first time. The second, all future launches happen based on the dock. And I have to think that this is something new about the way Gatekeeper is treating things. I don't know if that will persist beyond, you know, the betas. If that's it feels like a user experience.
It's a GUI.
It does.
Well, maybe it's a GUI indicator of maybe why you're getting this request.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's not entirely clear.
It's the sort of thing that could be confusing.
It is to confusing. Folks who yes.
don't know what's going on, which is going to be most of us.
Right. So if you see that, it's clear that this is related to these new, you know, it's rescanning these via Gatekeeper and not just inheriting all the approvals that you had given in Mojave. Right. And again, well, at least with the first developer beta.
If you've already blessed an app in Mojave, I believe it's going to continue to run.
But that's what I'm saying is it's a very different experience running it in Catalina. Yeah.
One of the things that Apple's doing with privacy policy is that in Mojave, they've had protections on messages and mail and your photos. They're going to extend that to the desktop, where sometimes people plant sensitive files because the desktop is their working area, and also the trash, because you may think that when you file something in the trash, it's gone, but it's not. It's just in a folder, and it is accessible to malware. So you may have forgotten about it, but the malware hasn't. And yeah. So it might go munging around your trash looking for interesting things you've deleted, like my old password file. So there's that. And also external devices.
Well, John,
the other thing that Catalina is extending prevention to is right now within Mojave in security and privacy, you've got control over whether an app can access your camera or your microphone. The first time an app launches, it asks for permission to use a microphone, and you can go to security and privacy preferences and see which apps have requested and been granted access to your microphone and your camera. But Catalina adds access to your desktop and your keyboard.
And screen recording
and authorization for apps to access your keys, strokes like maybe Text Expander.
Oh, that
so
makes sense.
This would,
oh, right. Yeah. That's right, because Text Expander has never given permission for that before. Or has never had to ask for permission. I mean,
well, Text Expander used a helper app.
Yeah.
And the helper app is what asked for permission in Mojave. I've had that happen. But I guess the mechanisms are slightly different in Catalina.
That's interesting. What were you, Brian, you had a question and we kept stepping on you. Go ahead.
This would be then further making the world of, you know, keyloggers and other sorts of spyware really require social engineering, really getting you to give them permission to do their ill deeds.
Right. Yeah.
Right. One of the things Apple pointed out in the first couple of slides is that there's a multifaceted defense of macOS 10. There are things that are done in different layers in different ways, so that if anyone is compromised, it doesn't break the whole system, which I thought was interesting.
Oh,
and the other thing they devoted a whole slide to was at the end of the first part of the presentation, before Kelly came on, the presenter, there was a big slide that said, you will always be able to run your apps if you have to. There will always be a way to figure out how to run an app that you really want to run. We won't stop you from running custom apps that you want to run. If you bypass Gatekeeper and you know what you're doing,
sure,
and you're aware of the risks, we won't prevent that.
Well, that's good.
So that's good to know going forward.
That's actually a really good thing, right? Because Gatekeeper is there to keep you from something happening without your knowledge. But as we've seen, right, in the past with Gatekeeper, you can tell it, no, like I'm very much intentional about this. I want to let that thing run. And it's let us. And it's from what you're saying, that remains. And that's actually awesome, because that's.
And that was mine.
Yeah.
And it was said mindfully about, you know, the special nature of the Mac in our world.
That's good. That's really good.
So John, you mentioned one of the things that is a trigger for me is when Apple makes our Macs less usable by protecting us.
Sure.
In the process of protecting us, they inadvertently make the Mac less usable. And you mentioned up top that parts of this presentation try to speak to that. So,
yes. And I would say that that's not a correct overall statement. I think that's part, as I said in the early part of the show, it's sort of an anecdotal thing where Apple's clamping down on Mac. It's going to become iOS. I won't be able to run my apps anymore. You know, that's not the flavor, the gist that I got out of this presentation. They're doing things elegantly behind the scenes that are helping your security. And the developers are going to have to comply with these rules that enhance security. But if the developers do that, everything's going to look like it always did. You double click your app and you're on your way.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Thank you. This has been great, John. Is there any one last thing that you want to share from this presentation before we move on to our second topic here today?
I can't find the slide. I'm looking through it. If I find it real quick, I'll jump in and mention it.
Well, you look for a second. I am going to take a brief second and thank all of our WWDC 2019 sponsors. Our coverage sponsors make all of our travel and interviews and all of that on-site stuff, as well as a lot of this back office stuff, truly possible here for WWDC. And we would encourage you to go tell them thank you from us and from you. If you visit Mac Observer, you can click on the WWDC 2019 link and see all these sponsors' names. They are Sanebox, Smile, Carbon Copy Cloner, Direct Mail, and iMazing. And they really, really rock. So our thanks go out to them in a huge way, and hopefully yours as well. John, did you find that slide?
I found the slide, and it's important.
Okay.
Catalina moves us from user consent to user intent, which is very elegant. User consent is reactive, and the prompt from user consent interrupts your workflow. In Catalina, we move to user intent, which is proactive instead of reactive, and things are inferred from your workflow so that they don't have to interrupt you and stop you.
Sure.
And this will reduce the number of interrupting dialogue boxes.
I like
if they've Windows for a while.
If they've achieved that, giddy up.
Yeah, that's great.
That's all I have. I've told you everything I know.
And then some. So there you go. Would you please tell us everything that you know about this Apple TV strategy by the numbers? We don't have a ton of time left, but I did not. We promised this at the beginning, so I wanted to make sure we got here. So you wrote this up. You read this over at Loop Ventures.
Loop Ventures.
Yeah.
Gene Munster. It's ironic that Gene Munster wrote it because, as we know, for a long time, he was a big fan of an Apple branded television.
He was. That's true.
And he revealed in this article that there was an Apple TV group that was disbanded 4 or 5 years ago, which he became aware of. So in 2014,
an Apple television group, just to separate from the Apple TV group.
Sorry.
Yep. Yep.
I have to watch my language here.
Yes, watch TV your app. Language, man. That's right.
Watch my language. So instead, Apple has gone the route of integrating the functionality of Apple TV into third-party branded televisions. They've started with Samsung. They have emerging agreements with Sony and Vizio, I believe.
Yep.
And the new 4K TVs, you will be able to access the Apple TV system. I don't know whether this involves any hardware from Apple. I kind of got the feeling that it's all done in software on their processor.
That would make the most sense, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know about the privacy protections that tvOS has in place. So I don't know if any of those are compromised. So moving on, Gene talks about how he believes that most TVs will eventually have embedded Apple TV software. And the adoption curve, it compares to CarPlay. It's maybe a little slower than people would want, but getting stronger as time goes on. Apple's approach to the living room has been to expand the Apple TV hardware to as many systems as possible, and he gives some nice numbers. He estimates there's 26 million U.S. homes with an Apple TV. That's 21% of U.S. households. And he believes there are 53 million active Apple TVs worldwide. Years ago, I tried estimating the number of Apple TVs that had been sold, and so I didn't follow up with that every year. But it's nice to know that Apple has sold about 53 million Apple TVs worldwide.
Well, he's also estimating that.
Right.
To be fair.
Yeah, that he's experienced at doing that and has sources. So if you include the 4K TVs that are starting to really ramp up, Apple's going to have a goodly amount of Apple TV 4K technology in the hands of users, whether it's in the little black box or whether it's embedded in your new TV, your new 4K TV. And why is Apple doing this? Of course, for Apple TV Plus subscription revenue.
Yeah, services. That's right. Yes.
If you can get yourself to 100 million Apple TV systems and you can get a third of your subscribers to sign up for Apple TV Plus, you've got 33 million subscribers out of the gate.
That's right.
And you're competitive all of a sudden in a way that maybe people didn't think you would be competitive.
No, that it makes sense. And I, to your point, Brian, I think it will be software, not hardware. Well, that's wishful thinking. I'm hoping that Apple learned their lesson from HomeKit, where it required basically Apple custom hardware, or at least Apple specified hardware, to run that crazy elliptical curve encryption on the original HomeKit stuff, and then they backed that off so people could do it in software. So hopefully, Apple TV or whatever this is, I'm curious to see it and experience it. I want to know how close to tvOS it is in terms of functionality and all of that.
Knowing Apple, I don't believe they would have allowed tvOS to be compromised, in the sense that the TV, like a lot of smart TVs, can monitor what you're watching and report to those who might want to buy the information.
Sure.
I don't believe Apple would agree to that.
Well, I'm curious how much of tvOS is there. Right. Like, yeah.
TVOS running as a process on their host CPU?
Right. Or is it just, the Apple TV app? Like, is there just an app that Apple has developed that goes on these TVs that runs alongside, say, that TV's native Netflix app and that TV's native?
That's an awesome question.
Right.
That's an awesome question.
Or will I be able to install apps from the App Store?
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah, that Gene didn't get into, but these are great questions.
Yeah.
Another great question is whether or not, like, there were a lot of people who just had this knee-jerk reaction after that keynote event that Apple is clearly getting out of the Apple TV hardware business. And I don't think that's the case.
No, there'll always be people who need the separate box.
Right.
Right. That would make sense, because there are people who, perhaps like me, who already have a 4K TV and their Apple TV 4K fails for some reason. They need to go out and buy a replacement. They don't want to buy another TV.
Right.
That's
out of many.
I don't think so either. But if Apple is no longer, if Apple's primary focus is simply getting subscription revenue as opposed to trying to offer this overall total experience, I can see them moving to just having it be on all the TVs and not requiring their own hardware. I could see that happening. I just don't think that's where we're going yet.
I don't think so. I don't see any indications of that.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how this will all work. Reading about Samsung's implementation of it, users can simply select the Apple TV app icon to access all of their iTunes movies and TV show purchases, and browse more than 100,000 iTunes movies and TV shows to buy or rent, including titles available in 4K. So it is an Apple TV app.
In terms of the way
Samsung's doing it. So it's not like you're buying
TVOS.
A Roku TV, right? There's plenty of TVs out there that eschew their own native operating system and just deliver the Roku experience out of the box. That is not what's happening here. So, yeah.
No, this is, if that's the case, it's 100% that you're getting the new TV app, and therefore access to your iCloud library stuff and additional content that once would have been purchased from iTunes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, very cool. John, thank you so much for the research and telling us all about it. This is great.
Yeah, I hope that helped understand where macOS is headed.
It definitely. Yeah, man.
Yeah, oh, it's Apple comforting. TV too.
Yeah. And thank you, Brian, for being here and helping to kind of shape this conversation and all that good stuff. Great stuff.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
Listeners, thank you so much for listening. And we hope that Kelly's voice is recovered and that she will be back here tomorrow. But in one way or another, we will see you tomorrow.